And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight we have a very interesting guest. I'm looking forward to chatting because we have Eric Gonzalez, who is a Mayan daykeeper. And I'm really looking forward to talking all about, you know, what that means, what's happening with 2012 and where we're headed. So welcome, Eric.
Welcome. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about, I mean, I know that we're going to talk about this, but, you know, what is the journey that sort of got you, you know, where you are right now? Because it's very interesting because your background is very mixed and yet you were accepted into the Mayan culture. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. First, I want to say greetings to all my relatives out there and thank you for the opportunity to share, you know. I grew up in Guatemala, and so I've always been involved with the elders. You know, we've been fighting a civil war, you know, that the powers that be were had been, you know, oppressing the Maya. And so in my caring for justice and peace and you know, to support that which is in trouble, you know, since I was like 17, I've been traveling with elders and learning from the indigenous peoples. And my mother, is Caxiquel, and my dad is European. So, you know, I have that mestizo aspect of that. That's kind of, you know, it's given me opportunity to travel to the north. And I've been living here in the States, you know, since like 1971, and back and forth now to Guatemala. So, you know, in our efforts to, you know, be active in the social justice and the spiritual awareness, you know, and awakening of our nations, is that we've been focusing on that for the last 30-some years, you know.
Mm-hmm. What was it, though, that, like, how did you, because you are, as I was told, mixed corn person, part Mayan, part Cuban, born in Guatemala, but raised in the States. I mean, how did you get, because typically the Mayan have really kept to their own. How did you kind of move into that area? How's the bridge been made?
Yeah, I think for me it was in two ways. One is I received incredible healing and like restoration of my body by the Mayan healers, because I was paralyzed when I was two, you know. And then through the war, you know, and my efforts to be within the people, you know, the Maya saw that, you know, because it's been very kept secret, a lot of these things, and so they saw, you know, our intentions, and of course also destiny. It kind of, you know, sets us in relationship with some of those beautiful elders. And it's just been a way of life for me, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what happened that you were paralyzed at two? What?
Polio.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a lot of surgeries and a lot of, you know, treatments to get me to walk and, you know, restructure my right foot and leg. And so it's been a learning process all along from the beginning, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that obviously that would have opened up your spiritual journey or your path and all of the people that you've met.
Yeah, it's been a different, you know, childhood has been paralyzed and learning to walk, learning to going through surgeries, you know, then the treatments. My grandmother will see, you know, will visit a lot of the Mayan healers, and so that, you know, I received a lot of love and a lot of healings that, you know, I can walk and I'm very functional. You know, there's still the scars of everything, but, you know, it's been a blessing that I can walk, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so is that mostly related then to alternative healing versus also a combination of the Western medicine as well?
Yeah. And, of course, my relationship with the spiritual world that, you know, I've developed since an early age, you know, placed me in situations where, you know, it was known, and it was it really was matched with those spiritual elders who kept things secret, and so how I started traveling with them, it was that I learned to speak English a little bit, I speak Spanish a little bit, so I was a translator for great councils that a lot of the councils were kept secret, you know, the people from the north, elders from the north, and the elders from the south and Central America were gathering and traveling, and there was a lot of discussions, you know, about this timing, this time coming. And so that was my contribution in the early years of as a translator, mm-hmm. and somebody they could trust that, you know, I wasn't going to, you know, take it out and be disrespectful about that knowledge. And there's very delicate things still that we're still keeping within our nation, you know.
Sure, absolutely, which is very important, obviously. Okay, so we might come back to that a little bit, but let's talk about, you know, what is this shift of ages and 2012? What is that all about?
Yeah, according to the Armaya, you know, that our traditional ways, they've been, you know, studying, watching how the matrix, the cosmos work, and keeping records, very ancient records of how the Earth has gone through this shifting of these ages. It's like 26,000 years, 52,000 year cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Some are 64 million year cycles. And so there's huge calendrics that the people, you know, still connect with, they still use it. They're still in harmony and practicing with that matrix and the cosmos, how evolution is through this world. And so that's kind of like 2012, we call it 13 Baktun. And 13 Baktun, it comes, you know, it was written in stone and in Kiriwa, in one of the stelas, you know, it's like we can't ignore it. And it was in the future, the date was into the future. And so the Mayan astronomers and spiritual leaders and what we call Ahpops, like the kings or the great leaders, the great masters, they were, were able to travel through what we call, now they call them wormholes or dimensionals. We call them like the different worlds, you know. And so all indigenous peoples pretty much along this America, we call it Avyayala, consider the Maya travelers of time and keepers of time. That was our one of our responsibilities as a collective indigenous peoples of this land, that everybody had a specialty, you know. So the Maya kept that, you know. And so as we started traveling, like 77, 78, we went and visited a lot of different nations and seeing what was left of our indigenous peoples. And so the alliances were starting to be made back then. And so then, you know, some people have heard the prophecies that, you know, the condor and the eagle, the nations of the north, and, you know, indigenous nations, and the nations of the south, indigenous people, will again create a confederation, create an alliance that we had for millions of years, you know. And so now the Central American people, the people made out of the people of the feather serpent, will unite the condor and the eagle. And so that has happened. Now in our prophecy is that we had to walk the trade routes, the old ancient trade routes, you know, it's taken us all around the world, because we didn't just travel in this America, we travel all the way around the world. And then that's being established. Beautiful alliances with a lot of indigenous people made out of the different corn, like we have gone to Sweden and Norway, Finland up there, you know, creating alliances with the Sami people, creating alliance with the Oromo, you know, out of Ethiopia and Kenya. We're making alliances with the people from Aotearoa, which is the Maori people. You know, there's a whole this movement of indigenous people all over the world that are uniting. And so that's kind of why, you know, our nonprofit foundation we have is called Earth Peoples United, because that's part of the prophecy of the 13 Baktun, this 2012, is that Earth Peoples will emerge again, that the tree of life that was cut down at one time in the story, in the history, it will reflower again. So you see a lot of indigenous people reflowering, you know, sharing their knowledge, sharing their wisdom, sharing their ceremonies, sharing their way of healing, sharing the way of maintaining that connection to Mother Earth and to the elements, because it's something that the Western world, the modern world, has totally, you know, disconnected from. And that's why we're, a lot of people are in fear of the 2012. It's like a lot of people are, you know, making assumptions about the 2012, and then a lot of people are confused about the 2012. But our people, indigenous people, we are in celebration. Mm-hmm. So we're walking the trail routes. We're sharing medicine. We're sharing the wisdoms. We, you know, we have great potlatches or great gatherings where, you know, as the outside world trickles in, they see the wonders in the beauty that has been preserved for all humanity now, and not only for humanity, but for all our, we call them all our relations. You know, everybody who we share this world with, that still the Western world has no clue how to be in relationship with the water, the fire, the air, and especially our Mother Earth. You know, they're still cutting it down, destroying things, polluting things, living in ways that are not, you know, in harmony. And so this is our efforts now, that we have to find our way back home. We have to find our way back to growing our food, being close to the springs, being in relationship with each other, and then healing all the sickness that now we have, you know, all the dysfunctions of our minds, the sadness and the, you know, the feelings that we have that is not right in our hearts. A lot of our spiritual peoples, you know, all over the world are like trapped in different things that they, you know, don't understand. So the whole thing is a big mess. And so in this prophecy of the 13 Bakhtun, you know, we think that we still, you know, a lot of humans still think it's about us, the humans. And it's not. We are just a tiny little thing of what the earth is about. It's you know, it's about earth changes. It's about the shifting of the ages. It's about us, the humans, in that little tiny speckle of this whole thing that is happening. How are we going to readapt to the new paradigm? How are we going to, you know, prepare ourselves to the new frequencies and the new vibrations that are going to require of us to change our minds, change our ways, change our way we do things, and find ways to that we can be functional and in harmony with this beautiful changing world.
Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? How do we come into harmony? How do we in the Western world that is full of cities that cannot possibly allow for us to live off the land the way it is currently, how do we move into a place that we shift our consciousness into that level?
It will take great courage. It will take incredible strength. It will take an immense vision of us making the changes that are going to be needed for us to be in balance with nature. Mm-hmm. Like, we can turn a lot of those, like golf course as an example, and instead of using the water and watering just the grass, we can turn it into gardens. We can choose, you know, which companies not to support that are destroying the earth. Mm-hmm. We can choose, you know, organic food. We can choose to support the you know, the farmers market. We can choose to not eat all the junk and the poisons that are in, like, ketchup and mustard and mayonnaise and all of our foods that are pretty much, you know, you go to a marketplace, you know, and then it's like 40,000 or more items, and all, everything's packaged up, you know, and maybe not even 1% of that is good for us. Yeah. It's just junk and poisons and preservatives, and the way that they grow it is destructive to the earth. The way they ship it, the way they package it, and we have a, you know, big trash pile everywhere in the ocean and everywhere. So it's going to take personal responsibility to make very strong and decisions. You know, if we want to grow our own food, we can turn, like, lots of plots all over the cities that they have, like, pools, and they have, you know, grasses, and then turn into food. We can catch the rain for really good clean water to drink. We can, you know, change the way we use the electricity and be conscious of how we are consuming things. You know, all these things are little, but it's gonna take all of us. And if we know that when all of us start doing something, and we become like the consumer vigilante. Like, no, I'm not going to buy your product because you're exploiting children in India or Pakistan or something. I'm not supporting this war because it's all about oil and destruction. And, you know, we have to be very conscientious because whether we want to or not, or whether we're going to do something about it or not, the earth is going to change. There's nothing now the human can do to stop the ice from melting. They're not going to stop from the earthquakes. There's nothing the human can do to stop the cyclones and the tornadoes and the wave, you know, the big tidal waves and the diseases that are all over and they're evolving stronger. But there's something that we can do to start adapting, you know, so that there's clues and there's medicines and there's a lot of ways that we can, you know, do a little bit to see that we can going to adapt. Another example is create sustainable communities, create sustainable neighborhoods. You know, if there's grass and there's things, grow your food. You know, make sure that the bees are healthy. Plant more flowers. You know, if the deer and the elk can't get to, you know, across the highway, make sure we take responsibility to feed them. You know, to make sure or make the law so that they can have a way to access, you know, the prairies. Take some of the fences down, you know, make sure that the animals have their right to eat and do their thing too, you know. You know, stop some of this, like the different countries are destroying the rainforest to plant palm oil or soybeans, you know. Not all tofu comes from a good place or in a good practice. You know, we think, oh, let's not going to eat meat, so we're just going to eat tofu. And the tofu, sometimes we see that it's even more destructive to the earth than just eating, something that you grew, something that you had to kill, something that you know how it is. Like some of the kids now don't even know what happens with the, you know, in the whole process of our food. And that is really sad because when we see great challenge like earthquakes and floods and droughts and things, people don't even know where they're going to get their water. They don't even have food, preserved for 2-3 days. They don't even, they don't even know where they're going to go because the bridges are down. And, you know, so it's going to be incredible efforts by us making the conscientious, you know, choices that will secure our future.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned a whole bunch of things, so I'm just going to go through a few of them and hopefully we can find out what you mean. But, you know, typically when we talk about the matrix, we're kind of talking about the collective unconscious that sort of holds us in a place of fear. But you're saying that there's going to be a new matrix.
Yeah, this a new frequency, you know, is because we're not stagnated in the sky, in the space. We're moving, you know, we're one of the arms of the galaxy and it's rotating. And it seems like forever to make any movement because we're just, you know, limited to this world. But, you know, as we know, we're spiraling through the universe, so there's different frequencies and different things that happened. That, you know, we're looking at history when we look at the stars. We know that now. Mm-hmm. And so as we move into our future and we see what has happened in the past, then we know that there's this shifting of the ages, this new frequency. It will be a new code, a new requirement for life to grow under the new matrix. And so it's already changing, it's shifting. We see plants and the animals and the viruses and everything is evolutioning.
Right.
You know, so humanity, we have an incredible way to adapt, to make changes, but something happened to us. And we shattered that which was sacred. You know, we got away from being in nature. We forgot how to love nature, how to respect nature, and that, you know, is starting to reflect on who we are now. And so this new vibration It's like in the counting of the eras of the Maya and some of the other Mesoamerican peoples, is that this is the fourth world. And we can see that in what they call the Aztec calendar, that there's four squares in the middle of a circle, and each square describes on how the earth was destroyed in the past. Mm-hmm. And in the center, it shows how this earth is being purified. Uh-huh. It is the power of the sun. And so, and it also talks about how we're going to get through this purification, because the gears, they point out to a symbol right on top of the stone. And that symbol, it talks about collaboration, cooperation. It talks about that we must become like the bees. We must work like the bees, do the positive work to pollinate, to restore that which is broken, which has been contaminated. And we have the ability to do that. Imagine the money that it takes to build an aircraft carrier and how much stuff it's going to do and how much damage that's going to do. If we can use that resources and turn the whole city of New York or Boston just with that money into a flourishing garden, you know, everybody will have food, everybody will have good water, you know, have a house. I mean, how many millions of people are now with no homes?
Yeah.
You know, and some people have 2-3 homes, and some of the homes are empty. You know, there's something not right. And so this new frequency is when we start to really feel the power of nature. It's like, it's not going to stop. And mm-hmm. we're going to have to support each other. We're going to have to, like, you know, help each other, because, you know, maybe they don't have money, they don't have nothing, but maybe they have a code in their blood, or maybe they're adapted to the new viruses are coming. So somebody who has all this money and great things, you know, buried in the ground and this army protecting them, they won't have that antivirus, but that person in the street might have developed it. And so that exchange, what it's going to be worth, you know. Okay, open the house for me and I'll live with you and I'll give you some of my blood, you know.
Mm.
And so these are just a little examples of how the matrix already changing is creating this, you know, what a lot of humans too are feeling is an evolution of our soul, an evolution of consciousness. It's like, wow, we are, you know, we have this beautiful opportunity to really become spiritual again within this dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are really feeling that. They're making changes. They're, you know, like we, the indigenous people, have kept a lot of ceremonies, a lot of rites of passage, a lot of medicines that we use to restructure the mind, to help heal the body, to free that spirit. And when that happens, we're going to see that as the earth is moving along the space, we're coming into a new vibration of the galaxy. And this vibration is already changing the magnetic field of the earth, of the sun, is changing the way the way the earth is gonna be in balance with that. So we're moving into a new frequency of the galaxy or in space. We're gonna have to really adapt to that. We're gonna have to find the way that we're gonna have to change, because the way we are and the way we're caring, it won't fit there. We won't transcendent, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I can feel what you're talking about, and it sounds incredibly amazing in some senses, and I guess a little scary in others, because there's a lot of people that aren't quite ready for that. But it just, again, it reminds me of you know, the new Avatar movie, where everything is so interconnected, and we've really lost that connection, which is exactly what you're talking about. So how does time fit into this? Because time, you know, is this relative factor that we've sort of maintained in this world, but I believe time is going to start to change as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's already, and it has already, you know. It's just that our humanity, it's been like, we're like in an underworld, you know, in the aspect of an underworld where we're killing things, and it's a carnage in the earth. We kill humans, we kill trees, we kill the water, we kill everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, that is crazy. That's like unfunctional. It's like unbelievable, they say, you know, like what happened to us that we think this is normal, that this is okay to just go and kill everything, you know. And so it's an incredible journey that we're going to have to make back home. Mm-hmm. Now, we might get two choices. You know, one choice would be that we go through what we call the shamanic death, uh-huh. in which a lot of countries after an earthquake, after big floods, after, you know, they find out like, whoa, we don't have water, we don't have food, and then the dark side of humanity even gets even darker. And we see that happening when these huge disasters are, you know, already hitting the earth. And so the other is a shamanic initiation. Mm-hmm. It's like we start the spiritual process of cleansing ourselves, you know, we call it oneness in ourselves, in finding the relationship to spirit, to nature, to the water, to the, you know, to all the elementals. And so then we start being aware that there's a huge communication happening, and everybody's talking. The trees are talking, the rocks are talking, the water's telling us what she's going to do and what's going to happen, but we don't know how to understand it. So then we got some spiritual people that are trying to tell the humanity, you know, hey, you know, like it was told 200 years ago by Chief Seattle, whatever you do to the web of life, you do to yourself. Mm-hmm. The Hopis have talked about this. The Maya are talking about it. The Kogi from Santa Marta Mountains in Colombia gave their message to the world. Did we listen as a world? No. Are we listening as individuals? Yes. You know, so we our prayers, our ceremonies are that we are sharing this ceremonial way to relate to Earth again, to remind our humanity, like through maybe these means, that, you know, there's this connection to life. There is this vibrancy that if we don't connect it, we won't survive as a species. And at the same time, we're going to take a whole bunch of others with us. So like you mentioned Avatar, you know, that's how we indigenous people look. Everything's sacred. You know, everything has its purpose. You know, everything has its right to be there. And then we don't know that later, by destroying those forests, it's that the antidote was there. It was healthy. It was mm-hmm. there for us. The medicine was there. All we need is the earth. You know, we don't need some big company imitating, you know, and changing the, like they said, the aspect of the Mama Coca, an example from, you know, from South America. Mama Coca gives you energy, gives you vision, it gives you, you know, health. You know, it helps you make oxygen in your blood. But then they come over and they change it and it makes it addiction, and now it's mm-hmm. killing humanity. The same thing with the tobacco. Just two mm-hmm. little examples. But everybody's selling tobacco. You know, it's okay to suck tobacco in that way. It's okay to put poisons and things mm-hmm. that will make you addicted to this so you'll buy them again. That is so unbelievable that the human will think of those things. You know, killing humanity for the love of money, you know. And so that's, and it's just two little examples. So in Avatar, this is beautiful, nice message, you know. It reminds the people, like, hey, there is that vibrancy, you know, and we're going to have to make the journey. We're going to have to, like, stop the madness. We're going to have to stop the destruction. We're going to have to, like, spend time in nature. We're going to have to sit by the water. We're going to have to look at the sky and pray. And talk to the nature, say, hey, mother, you know, forgive me for I forgot how to talk, I forgot how to be in one. And please, you know, show me a way home. Show me what I must do, because maybe I have children. Maybe I have grandchildren. And the way the world's gone, and nothing changes, it's not even a good thing for them. You know, so we have to, like I said, it's going to take the, you know, incredible courage. So at the other thing that happens when the great disasters and things happening and there's a great chaos like we do that today, we live in this world, is like the heroes are born. Mm. The superheroes, you know. At the time when India needed to be free, Gandhi emerged. Mm. At the time of the civil rights, Martin Luther King and others arose. You know, and at different times now, we have a whole bunch of medicine people reminding humanity, hey, it's time to go home. It's time to have a council around the fire. Put down your cell phones. Get those little machines that the kids are, you know, shorting their brains with, and shut him down and come and sit with the trees, you know, come and sit here and around the fire. You know, talk about what's important to us, you know. Talk about our future. Nobody talks about that except maybe when I retire, I want all this money and I want this big fancy house, you know. But they don't think that because we didn't plant the orange tree for the future that is healthy, you know, our kids won't have any orange juice. That's just a little example. But, you know, you get the whole picture. We're not securing the future for humanity. We're allowing big companies to destroy the very thing that is going to feed the humanity in the future is the GMOs. You know, all those companies, they're like changing the plants of the tomatoes, the corn, and, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. They say they almost control 80% of our food now.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy. That's madness. That's like there's no future for humanity if we keep allowing them to keep doing that. So what do? We go on the sweat lodge, we pray, we connect to the fire, we do our fire ceremonies, we do a lot of initiations. When people come, you know, some fly down, some come in from the underworld, some are crawling, some are like wounded, some are lost, and some are very joyous and happy because they've been in a good journey. And then we go through our initiations. Our initiations takes us through, again, building that relationship with Mother Nature. Building a relationship with the spirituals, with the elementals, with the supernaturals. And that's kind of where, you know, we're teaching. You know, I've been teaching they call it teleclasses. Like here, I talk on the phone, and it's people from all over the world. You know, the first teleclass that they asked me to do, we call it Navigating 2012.
Cool.
You know, how are we going to navigate through this process, you know, so we gave a 13 steps on that because we work with the number of 13, you know. And so, and now we're on our, or we just completed the first presentation of a 13-week class again that, you know, that we're going to, you know, talk about these things, you know. And so this new teleclass, we're calling the Shamanic Spiritual Training, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it will take these 13 steps in the way we look at things to go through an initiation. First, the realization, self-awareness. Two, the searching is the exploration. Three, the crossroads, decision-making. Four, the commitment, the sacred vows. Five, the gathering. Preparing our sacred bundles. Six, the presentation, setting up our mesa or our sacred altars. Seven, the activation, sacred intention. Eight, the holding of sacred space, the living mesa. We becoming the prayer, you know, instead of just praying, we become that prayers, like Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nine, the sacred pilgrimage, spiritual trade routes through our Mother Earth. 10, the integration, becoming one with the bundle of wisdom. 11, the gratitude, spiritual generosity. 12, the expression, crystallizing our own visions. 13, the harvest, reaping what you sow. And so as we hear this, you know, it kind of makes sense, the spiritual journey that we are, that when we do our nine fires or the 13 fire ceremonial initiations, you see where these elementals are going to take us, you know, our minds, how our spirits, how our bodies are going to be. And they're strong, you know. A lot of people sometimes they start the number one and they don't finish. Others, they finish the 13 and say, hey, I'm ready for the next one. So it's about each individual. How much we want to become, you know, in relationship back again to nature. And so this is kind of what we're doing, and this is how we're going to, you know, share with all our relations, Western world, a lot of indigenous people, you know, forgot their ways. So when the question you asked me, how are we going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
This is just a couple of examples of what we do and what we're sharing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really amazing listening to you talk, because I do think that we, you know, the greed of this planet, the way we have seen things, I mean, it really has been all about humanity and not about, or not even humanity. It's all about me. It's all about, you know, what can I get from the world? What can I take from the world, instead of, you know, what can I give and what can I receive? What are my rights? How am I contributing to, you know, the problems? How am I contributing to the solutions? How am I seeing the vision that I'm wanting to create? I mean, it's really fascinating how you're talking, because I think, you know, we get so caught up in, you know, where am I right now, that we don't think about where is the earth right now? How can I help the water? How can I help the earth? How can I help, you know, the trees? It's a different mentality that's really not part of the Western culture.
No. But as we see, you know, like, nature is collecting.
So it seems.
And we call it toch. Toch is the exchange of the gift. So we think we're just going to go around and do whatever, you know. So we cut the trees and we do the whatever we do to the water. But sooner or later, we're going to realize, whoa, I think we have a deficit. We owe a big chunk of ourselves to nature. Like, how much does it take? You know, how expensive it would be to make water?
Mm.
You know, how expensive it would be to make air? And we don't have the money or the resources to do that on a world level. You know, how much is it to pay the earth for, you know, ripping her up and taking all the copper and all the crystals from the ground? And she had them there for a reason.
Yeah.
We're taking crystals, you know, there's a lot of things about crystals, but the crystals have a purpose to be inside the ground. It helps keep the vibration for the ozone.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we take that and the more we drain the caves and allow the temperature to change, and so the earth is like, whoa, you know, something is wrong. So, you know, she's gonna have to collect. You know, she's charging us for, she's gonna charge us for, you know, messing up with her beauty,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we see, you know, in different islands now and different parts of the world. And we, you know, over and over, we say, oh, the temperatures are getting the hottest, and the temperatures are getting the coldest, and the biggest drought, the longest drought, or the biggest floods that we've seen. And so, you know, if we don't stop, you know, if we don't pay attention, then we're not going to make it. But if we do pay attention, we make those changes, you know, wow, they can say in the future, in the matrix, the collective conscience of the universe can say, wow, that species really, you know, made it happen on their own, because they have a free choice and free will. They had a choice, and they made the collective choice to preserve and restore that beautiful world that we put them on. And like, wow, how gracious it is, you know. So we see that when we do something beautiful for nature, like you say, what are we going to do? We plant more trees, we plant flowers, you know. Nature's so gracious. She's so happy that you planted a fruit tree. It's just going to give you apples for years and years. She's so gracious that you took the time to plant that orange or plant the corn, you know, and then you share some with the deer and you share some with the birds. And then she's so gracious that you wake up every morning with hundreds of birds singing and you have good food and you're healthy. And, you know, that's the graciousness that we're going to get on the sixth sun, they call it. Where the people are going to be made out of honey, golden light. That's the prophecy we're hitting, you know. But imagine what we need to do to reverse that. It's incredible efforts. I mean, superheroes we're going to have to become to make the changes necessary. And in the time, you know, the clock is ticking.
Right.
And nature's not going to wait for us to finally say, okay, I guess I better stretch and get up and do something, you know. She's not waiting. You know, and so we better, you know, like, that's why we share these messages, because we can do beautiful things. We, you know, we have a healing center down in Guatemala on the lake shores of Lake Atitlan. And we have planted over 50,000 plants.
Hmm.
and it's just a beautiful garden, and there's butterflies, there's birds of all kinds, there's the little possums and raccoons, and everybody else is coming up, back up again, and the old trees that they keep cutting, you know, they're growing faster and beautiful, and now it's good shade, and there's other places where lots of fruit, so we get papayas and mangoes and coffee, and I mean, just a huge amount of graciousness by nature.
Mm-hmm.
We get so much firewood, and we don't have to cut a tree.
Right.
We just prune the trees that are shading our coffee, and we got so much firewood to give it away and sell it, and we have lots of wood for our sweat lodges and for our fires that we don't need to cut trees.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can do things like that, you know, here now in Deer Mountain, we have another place north of Mount Shasta in Northern California.
Nice.
Here it's a little bigger, it's like 1,800 acres.
Mm.
And we're just, you know, letting nature teach us, you know, there's beautiful mounds of acorns and a lot of like stinging nettle for medicine and Oregon grape for detoxing ourselves and all kinds of things. And there's lots of water, and so we're planting our gardens and foods and so forth, you know. So that's what we had to do. We had to make the effort. We had to go buy again our land that, you know, was taken from us from a long time ago, and now we got to go buy it, and we got to restructure. We have to heal it. We have to transform it, and then we got to learn, you know. We have so much to learn and prepare that we always echo, you know, the elders, like, what's it going to take for us to be in harmony again?
Right.
What's it going to take for us to be healthy?
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of what we do. So we have incredible examples that they do work. You know, and when we go through ceremonies and the sacred rites of passage, we're going now in about a week, you know, down to Guatemala, and we're going to do a seven-day ceremonial intensive, you know, a spiritual ceremony.
Nice.
on the shores of this beautiful lake, you know. And then there we'll introduce people to one ceremony of fire, to two sweat lodges, you know, we call them temazcales, to an all-night-long vigil and prayer, and a lot of teachings, a lot of integration, you know. So this is kind of what we're preparing to do. And so, you know, what can we do? The ceremonials, we do the healings, we do the sharing like this. We're putting out some publications. We have made a website, you know, and so we're sending the communications out. We're doing the best we can, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, the sacred initiations, the fire initiations, and they're obviously making us in harmony with all of the elements and all of the elementals and Mother Earth. And is there anything, though, like you talk about, you know, the sadness in a lot of people's hearts, the fact that we're not in our hearts, the way we're, you know, mostly in our minds? What can people do to heal some of these things within us?
Yeah, that's why those teleclasses that I'm sharing, it has steps to, it's like we can't overdose somebody with information or a spiritual experience. We have to dosages, you know, so we take little steps, but each step is really strong and is sure, you know, and we can integrate it. So what can we do is like what we're sharing, you know, we're gonna give some teachings and some ways that we can restart thinking ourselves, you know, like self-awareness. What does that mean? If we can become self-aware of where we are, who we are, what condition we are, what am I doing, what's my relationship to my world, then we start looking at the next thing. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to search an alternative reality. I'm going to, you know, where do I go? So maybe they'll come to the shamans, the spiritual leaders, to the medicine people, and that's where we are. You know, we've been holding those circles for thousands and thousands of years, millions of years. You know, we're holding what we call the sacred bundles. These are experiences that the human will go through and that they can witness on their own the divine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need me or some book or something to tell them how it's going to be. But we need each other to show the way to that door. And then the person on their own have to open the door with their free choice and free will and then go through it and then walk that way. It's going to take responsibility of ourselves, you know, responsibility of the way we think, responsibility how we feel, responsibility what we do, and there the strength. And when we start feeling that strength, we're like, oh my goodness, all my people should be doing this. We got to get back to this, you know. And so the loving feeling, you know, that maybe took us to your show is that we have had incredible thousands of ceremonies all over the world. Mm-hmm. And the people are gathering. They're feeling the relationship back to the circle, back to the community, back to the clan, back to the, you know, becoming earth peoples again. And so, you know, the teleclasses that I'm teaching and I'm sharing, you know, is ancient wisdom. This is the wisdom that has been kept secret for a long time, like our nine fires, our ceremonies. Those are preserved or you know, reserved, or they were reserved for the people that trained to be shamans, the spiritual leaders. So it's an incredible initiations, you know. A lot of challenges, a lot of tests. But if we up to and we have a heart that it cares and loves, we make it like with flying colors, they say. It's a joyous to be in ceremony. It's a joyous to be healthy. It's a joyous to see your first garden, and then you have your first canning or your first dry of your foods or your first meal that you say, look, most of it on this table we grew, you know, or most of this table we went to gather it, you know, or here's my bundle of medicines. And nature's still giving the medicine out there. We just got to walk in the mountains, walk around the rivers, along the lakes, down to the ocean, go diving down and get the medicines, you know, the good foods, you know, like food should be the medicine.
Mm.
And the thing that's being told the doctors is, if you can't heal your people, you know, by changing their diets and giving the food, all these pills are not going to do it, you know. And so this is where, you know, it takes the responsibility of ourselves. Like, what are we going to do? And this is the steps. You know, we have opened it up for maybe like 15 years already to share our ceremonial fires. We have opened ourselves to share the sweat lodges. We have opened ourselves to the all night long ceremonies. You know, we have opened ourselves to share in great councils. You know, we have brought a lot of people into the Mayan circles and other indigenous circles that we are in relation with, but the preparation has to be made, because the way we act in the movie theater, you know, or we act in the at a bar, it's not good to act like that around the sacred fire, you know. There's a lot to learn, and that's kind of where we're preparing, you know, a lot of our humanity, and it's just not me, there's thousands of our elders already, a lot of spiritual, you know, indigenous people sharing and sharing and sharing so that we can turn this big darkness around, you know.
Right. And it really is the sacredness that we are missing in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So you also, I have information here that there's mystery schools of the Maya. I'm assuming we've been talking about all of this, but is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Yeah, our sacred mystery schools, you know, I have a lot of young people and we have a lot of other people that walk with us, you know, they travel with us. We go through different councils, you know, up to Haida, to British Columbia, down to, you know, Aymara country or Caddo country or through Mexico or, you know, Hawaii or other places where, you know, we start going through the sacred mysteries, you know, learning again all these things, you know. So our ceremonial camps, you know, we have all through the summer here because we set up teepees, you know, and then we have a beautiful campsite, you know, here in the middle of like thousands and thousands of acres, you know. And our summer gathering for the nine fires is on July 5th to the 17th. It's 13-day ceremonies, you know. And then we have an annual Deer Mountain Wisdom Keeper and Youth Council, because we want to bring the wisdom keepers, the elders, and we want to have the youth there. And this is going to be in August 5th through the 9th. And those are like some of the processes of our, of the sacred mystery schools. And people learn, people share, people participate in the ceremonies, you know, things that haven't been offered in the Western world for, who knows, a long time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are two events that we're having here in the summer here at the north of Shasta, you know. And we're always having, March 4th through the 12th, we're having the ceremonies down in Lake Atitlan in Guatemala, in the land of our people, the Maya, you know.
Right.
Our ceremonial center is inside of an ancient city, and so there's very beautiful things there that, you know, not only the gardens and the sweat lodges and the roundhouse, we have a we call it Maloca, it's a sacred ceremonial house. There's where we teach, you know. So if people are interested, you know, we're going to make these journeys and there's processes for those who are interested that it will take us through the sacred initiations, you know.
Right. And all of that information is on your website?
Yeah, it's on our website, and it's earthpeoplesunited.org.
Right. Now, earlier, and I don't know, I didn't bring it up, but you had mentioned that about the Tree of Life. Can you expand on that a little bit? How we did you say we cut it down? I'm sure
yeah,
we have.
Yeah, our peoples in Avyayala here in America, we consider that we were part of the Tree of Life. It was this beautiful tree. It was abundant. It was giant. You know, it was huge. It's like there were thousands of nations. They were expressed in thousands of ways. You know, up and down this whole America. And as we saw, when we saw the onslaught of the Europeans, you know, they saw this Tree of Life. It was wondrous. You know, it was free. They had never experienced that kind of freedom, maybe in Europe.
Hmm.
And so they came down and they started taking the flowers. You know, started putting their views on everybody else. They start stealing the land, start killing everything. And so they start cutting the branches. You know, they cut the limbs and they cut the leaves. And then, there were, you know, a couple hundred years later, there's just the trunk barely standing.
Hmm.
And then we don't want that anyway. So in the way, you know, so they, boom, they cut it and they burned it. And it was, the earth got really messed up all around there. There was nothing left, they thought, you know. But then there are prophecies that we talk about, like the 13 Bakhtun and others. They talked about an era, a time when, you know, at the time there would be almost everything would be lost to humanity, not just to our own people, but to humanity in general. There will be this last of these elders, these beautiful jewels. They were the last, like the little seeds that were left in the ground and from that Tree of Life, you know, because some of it was kept secret. It was kept down in the roots, because every time it came back up, boom, they were cut down, you know.
Mm.
People were taken to residential schools, people were killed and poisoned and given blankets with diseases, and, you know, we know our story here in America. And so, but they say that we had to hunker down, you had to, like, stay quiet and still. So don't move, they said, because the darkness will pass on. And then we will have the signals. We will know when the stars will mark the time, and then the positions of the heavens will again shine upon this place where there used to be this Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of one beautiful tree, it started sprouting from all these seeds. There were giants all over. And so these little trees are like coming up everywhere, and they're just as strong and beautiful as the original tree. But this time there's thousands of those, you know. And if they couldn't do that to one tree, they won't be able to do it to thousands of them. And so that's where our people are in celebration. When they read the codices and they read the stones and they went to the sacred sites and the ceremonies and the medicine plants, the teachers talked to us, you know, and told us it is time to celebrate. And that's the truth, you know. That's what we see. It's a reflowering, you know. Unbelievable that you would have seen in the 1500s, 1600s, 1800s, you know, early 1900s, that other people will want to learn from the indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still, at times, they still think that, you know, they're savages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need that we need their religions, that we need their you know, their genes and their all their tools and their schools, you know, for us to be educated. But no, we see now that, you know, I have students, they're psychologists, they're doctors, they're therapists, they're you know, their own big companies or whatever, you know, they're coming and they say, oh, man, this doesn't make any sense, you know. We have to heal our karma. We have to learn through the ceremonial, you know, ways. And he says, okay, you know, come in here. This is what remained of the tree of life, but it's blooming again. And imagine this tree of life in the spiritual place is still powerful and nothing could touch it, you know. And you're walking up, you know, this mountain or these steps and it's brilliant, you know, this brilliant tree. And on it, there's this white flower. It kind of looks like flowers. There's giant flowers, you know. But then as you get closer, you notice that they're moving. And the white flower is a butterfly at the same time. Mm-hmm. At the same time that it's connected to the tree, it's also free to bounce around, whatever it wants to do. And then as you get closer and you start listening to their story, their songs, you know, you start really looking through them, those are the souls of beings who because of their evolutionary process, they made it back to the tree of life. Mm. You know, beautiful beings, you know, great masters and teachers. And then from that tree, as we get closer, they nourish in you, your soul, by sprinkling some of their pollen. Hmm. And some of them choose to come back, they said, to this world, or they go to other worlds, or the other dimensions, and from that place of oneness with the divine at the original place of creation, they send out like their medicine, their teachers, their healers, their medicine people, you know, to, again, helping the restructuring of whatever happened at that place that it got, you know, dysfunctional. So these are the healers, you know, and that's what our people knew, and that's what they're celebrating, you know. It's like, we know that nature's going to do what she's going to do, and we're not afraid, we're celebrating. We're so happy that we see the reflowering of incredible ways to be with nature, that a time of darkness is, you know, still strong, and it's still powerful, and it still doesn't want to give up, you know, but mm-hmm. nature's going to take care of that. We don't have to do it. We just have to heal ourselves, prepare our minds, prepare our bodies, and prepare our spirits. So when this shifting is happening, we're celebrating. We're just like, you know, our people are gathering through many places. We're like, you know, like a place in longhouses in Alert Bay up in British Columbia. They had a small longhouse, and now they got a huge house, and they can't fit anymore. 5,000 people in that ceremony for so many days, you know. Mm. The canoes are coming down to Salish country all the way up in British Columbia. The people are celebrating to be free from alcohol and drugs and the traumas from the residential schools and all the what the religions and the governments have done. And they're going back and they're carving their totem poles. They're building their canoes. They're singing their songs. They're rebuilding their regalia. And they're coming so strong that last year they said it was 10,000 canoes up and down the whole British Columbia. And I can go on to so many examples throughout, like in Mexico. It scared the Mexican government because in those sacred sites like Teotihuacan and like other places in Chichen Itza, hundreds of thousands of people are gathering in Teotihuacan, millions of dancers. You know, all dressed up in their regalia and their drums and the conchs. Imagine at midday when the sun was at the zenith and summer solstice, and you get a million people in ceremony. Mm. He scared the church so much that the Pope had to come back to Mexico and try to reestablish his hold on the people.
Wow.
You know, that's kind of the power that we flowering from the tree of life. And we see so many people from the Western world coming into our ceremonies.
Sure.
There's people from me, like me, that was reintegrated back to our secret societies, but it took a lot of ceremonies to see if we could even hold that, even to witness some of it. And so, those initiations are being opened to other circles now, other people who we know that have beautiful hearts. They were, you know, they're making their declarations that we don't want to support that way of being. We don't want to be the ones who will continue destroying the world. You know, so they're making those vows to the ceremonies that, hey, we're going to do what it takes to grow our food, to be healthy, to help each other, to make a difference, to reach out to the young people by the millions that they're lost and they're frustrated and they're, you know, stuck in drugs and big parties and they're going the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the effort, you know, that some of our people are doing, you know, building more sweat lodges, raising the totem poles, building the longhouses, the kivas, you know, building the malocas, and just our people on with the Tree of Life, we're like, you know, so celebrating that we can go back underneath the Tree of Life again and receive that pollen, that light, that nourishment, those teachings. And so that's kind of what we're sharing, and it's up to each person how far they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much of their efforts are going to, you know, help them get well again.
Right. Well, Eric, it's been a pleasure. This has been a very informative and very inspiring message. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are looking for this kind of information. And, you know, I'm really pleased to have had you on here. And maybe we could have you come back again and, you know, as we get closer to see how we're doing and how we're progressing. But so you have some teleclasses that they began actually this week and they go for 13 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And like I said, we just finished one last Tuesday.
Right.
And then and it's going to go for another 12 weeks. But, you know, people can always sign up at any time because we're recording them. And we're going to make them available as CDs and e-books,
nice.
You know, through our website and through other means that we're going to, you know, we've been documenting everything. And so, you know, through our website, those things will be soon, you know, available.
Okay.
And so at any time, you know, people can sign up for them. And the information, again, is at earthpeoplesunited.org. And so, you know, there's our phone numbers in there and way to communicate with us. And, you know, we are a nonprofit organization. And so we have a nice foundation that is taking care of a lot of the, you know, sustainability, and so, you know, we have a lot of projects and a lot of efforts that we're doing, and, you know, we're always welcoming, you know, people with vision, people with great prayers, people with their communities. They want to, you know, be part of these trade routes and create unity, you know, create some sort of a good exchange, and thank you for your offer that, you know, we can come back and share, and this is, you know, a message that a lot of our elders, you know, we're collectively understanding that that's what we need to do. And it's, you know, it's been in a continuum of lifetimes of people before us, and we want to be able to give that bundle in better way than we got it this time, you know,
mm-hmm.
to our next generation.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much. It's been, as I said, a great pleasure, and you've given us a lot of great information. So thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you, Laurie, and blessings to you and all my relations. You know that there is much hope, there's much beauty, and, you know, we just have to put that prayer together, and you know, we'll welcome anybody like that who will come, you know, closer to our fires.
Great.
Thank you for today.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.